This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Over the weekend, thousands of people turned out for the first ever March for Science. It was actually more like 600 marches all over the world. This unprecedented public show of support for science was largely prompted by what many view as the anti-science stances of the Trump administration. But the attempt to organize the science community has also revealed deep divides over the role of science in government and persistent problems when it comes to diversity and inclusion. Later this hour, we'll hear from some who split with the March for Science for just those reasons. We'll also give the Trump administration's science policies a three-month checkup, see how the reality compares to the fears and predictions. But we start with the march itself. Hilary Pilewski is a postdoctoral scholar at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, studying how the ocean absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. She's also a member of the newly formed group 500 Women Scientists, and she marched here in Falmouth. Hilary, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And joining us by phone is Andrew Rosenberg. He's director of the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists, which was one of the more than 200 March for Science partner organizations. Andy, always good to talk with you.
Thank you, Heather.
Andy, what do we know so far? Do we have a sense of how many people turned out to these hundreds of marches on Saturday?
Well, it's certainly tens of thousands, but I'm not sure I've seen an accurate count anyplace. What I think is most important, not just the numbers, is that clearly there was energy across the world, really, from Falmouth, Massachusetts, to San Francisco, to Chicago, and then overseas in, London, Berlin, etc. I even saw a sign from the North Pole of three scientists who were working at the North Pole who were marching for science.
And I believe I actually heard something about an Antarctic contingent as well, so possibly...
Right.
Both polls involved. Hilary, you marched with about 600 people here in Falmouth. What was that like?
It was really nice to be here in my own community where I knew a lot of the other people at the march and recognized them from people who I see at work and also in other parts of my life. So in some ways, that was very inspiring, even though it was one of the smaller marches.
This is not the first time that federal funding for science has been threatened by any means. And for that matter, science denial is frankly nothing new. It's been around. So what makes now the time that you feel it's really important, and clearly not just you, but hundreds of thousands of people signed onto the Facebook pages and that kind of stuff for the March for Science? What is it about right now that makes it so important to march?
Well, I think it's not necessarily just right now that's feeling important, but that there are a greater number of people than had been aware in the past of the importance of getting outside of our labs and getting outside of just talking to each other as scientists, and the importance now of talking to a broader audience about how the constituency for science is not scientists, it's everyone, because we're really doing this science in the public good. So our goal is to serve everyone in society, and also that we need to include everyone in society in the way we do science.
Andy, the Union for Concerned Scientists has always been a more politically engaged and vocal group. That's kind of the point of the organization. But 200 partner organizations for this march, many of which I think would not have signed on to a political action like this in the past. What do you think is different?
I think actually the scope and scale of the attacks on science are different in the current climate. I think that's both from this administration and Congress, and people are seeing it in other countries. I also think that we're at a time in our culture, including in the science culture, where people are no longer really accepting the argument that, well, we should just retreat to our labs and let this go by. It's not our business. So I think the scale of the attacks are much greater, and it's not just funding. This is actually dismissing scientific information, reversing decisions, undermining the process by which science comes into public policy, and, of course, attacking scientific information in the, in the public arena, in the media, and so on. All of that, I think, has people very energized. Again, it's not just in the United States, although here we certainly have our problems.
You say energized. It's certainly that's one contingent of the science community, but there's another large portion of the science community that says, well, it's exactly the fact that science is already becoming so politicized, so polarized, that perhaps we need to not do this. That's also the argument against marching, that this could be too dangerous and really put science into a dangerously polarized place and right into the crosshairs of those who want to try to denigrate science. Do you see that argument?
Well, frankly, I think, you know, of course, scientists like to argue. I don't buy that argument at all. First of all, I think we're already in the crosshairs. I don't think backing away somehow makes us less political. I don't think, for example, you know, the chair of the House Science Committee, Lamar Smith, who has attacked climate science, has gone after particular grants at the NSF and so forth. He's going to be any less political about things if people don't express their opinion. So I don't buy that argument, and I also don't hear it from, you know, earlier career scientists, students, my students and others that I work with. I mean, they feel very strongly that they should speak out. And as, I think it's important for people to recognize that just because you're a scientist, you know, you don't sort of leave your citizenship at the door when you pick up your PhD. You're still a citizen, and you still should speak out. I didn't actually think that the marches were highly partisan. Sure, some people were, but I thought mostly people were saying science is important, and we want to, you know, take our rightful role in our society, in our culture, in our public policy.
I mean, I think there's a subtle distinction there that the marches were definitely, as you say, trying to be not partisan, but definitely political, and that's a distinction that's comfortable for some and not necessarily comfortable for others.
Well, I mean, frankly, the idea that science is political, I'm sorry, that train has already left the station. If people are politicizing science, you can't deal with that fact by simply saying, well, that's not us. We're just going to retreat to our labs and publish papers. I just don't think that works.
In case you're just joining us, my guests are Andrew Rosenberg of the Union for Concerned Scientists and Hilary Pilewski of Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and 500 Women Scientists. We invite you to join our conversation. Tell us if you marched for science and why or why not. Call us toll-free at 866-999-4626. Send email to livinglabradio@capeandislands.org or find us on Twitter and Facebook. Hilary, you are a climate scientist, and climate science is really front and center in this whole thing. It's perhaps the most dramatic example of where the Trump administration differs from the scientific mainstream, and it's a pressing problem that needs to be addressed in some way politically. This march being on Earth Day, do you think that was the right choice, or do you think that potentially exacerbates this issue of polarizing or making it more partisan? I mean, for better or for worse, environmentalism and Earth Day have come to be pretty closely associated in many people's mind with a liberal agenda.
I think that's an interesting question. A lot of the challenges that I've heard about the choice to put the science march on Earth Day were actually less about the potential politicization of the science march and the politicization of climate science, where I agree that train has really left the station. Certainly for my entire career as a climate scientist, there has been no choice but to face the fact that the work that I do is seen as political. But I think there were some questions about whether it competed with other events that would naturally have happened on Earth Day as well. But I thought it was a reasonable choice because it was a time that many climate scientists like myself were already thinking about the importance of doing public outreach and communicating the importance of the work that we do to society, which, as Andy said, is increasingly something that we're realizing that we have to do. We can't just be talking amongst ourselves about the importance of climate science.
Andy, there's actually another march next week, the People's Climate March, and the Union of Concerned Scientists is also a partner organization for that march. How much overlap are you seeing both in terms of the goals, the organization of those two marches, and also who might be involved? Is there a concern about this competition, or do you think these two events are perhaps synergistic?
Well, we're sponsoring both because we think they're synergistic. I mean, I do think that the science march this past weekend was very broadly based. I mean, you had, you know, people in biomedical sciences. You actually had physicians marching in Boston, you know, a big contingent from the hospitals and so on. So it wasn't just about climate, and it wasn't so much focused on specific policies. But next weekend in Washington and in other places, but primarily focused on Washington, the People's Climate March, is very directly focused on dealing with the challenges of climate change. And I'd have to say that, you know, I'm not a climate scientist. I work in marine resources, as you know, Heather. But, you know, everyone who works on natural systems sees the effects of climate change. So we all work, in some sense, on climate-related issues now, not just those who model atmosphere and oceans and climate processes themselves. And so I think it is very broadly based in the science community anyway, even though it's focused on climate. And very specifically, the People's Climate March is calling for and being led by groups that are working for justice and equity, addressing issues of environmental justice and addressing issues of equity in our society, because, of course, vulnerable communities, disadvantaged communities, communities of color are really on the front lines of climate change all around the world. They are usually the most vulnerable to the ongoing effects. So that is front and center in the People's Climate March in a different way than in the March for Science.
Well, the March for Science has actually taken a lot of criticism, particularly on social media, for sidelining issues of diversity and inclusion,
right.
Excluding particularly women of color who wanted to help and advise on the march, and they've really been criticized for not being responsive enough to those requests, to those criticisms from underrepresented minorities. From the kind of organizer or partner organization standpoint, do you see that difference, and how do you feel about some of those critiques? And I mean, given that you are also part of the People's Climate March, where, as you said, equity and social justice is such a key issue, does that feel uncomfortable at all when you're in the March for Science setting?
Well, we raised the issues of diversity and inclusion with the organizers of the March for Science. I mean, understand that the organization of the March for Science was very much grassroots and frankly, you know, really was not experienced in developing this kind of an event. And so they learned along the way, as we all do. And I think they tried to respond effectively and include many more communities of color, bring in the Hip Hop Caucus and others. I know some of the scientists who are working with the organization who were trying to address those issues, not to the satisfaction of some, and I understand that, and I think it was a little bit, again, learning on the job, but I don't think the intention was to be exclusive. I do think it was useful, actually, to highlight some of the issues within the science community, which people don't like to talk about, of diversity and inclusion. And so it was important to do that and have that conversation apart from the march itself. And so the people who stood aside, they're raising important points.
Hillary, you're a member of this group, 500 Women Scientists, which kind of came together shortly after the election, and diversity and inclusion is front and center. I mean, there's kind of a pledge of action points, and many of them have to do with diversity and inclusion. Did the critiques of the march ring true for you, and did they make you question whether or not you wanted to take part?
Yes, absolutely. So I really did a lot of soul searching about how to respond to those critiques that were raised, particularly by women of color. And one of the reasons that I was so excited about this March for Science at the beginning was that their initial platform really highlighted the importance of diversity, and they formed this diversity team and brought in many people who are much more experienced with talking about the issues of diversity and inclusion in science, who have been doing this work for a long time, who aren't new to this, and the way many white people and white women like myself are much newer to doing this kind of work. And so I think it's really important to be listening to the voices of the most marginalized people in the scientific community when we talk about how we stand up for science, because I think in a lot of ways, the organization of the March for Science reproduced a lot of the same issues that have been longstanding in the scientific community, that we are listening to voices of people who are more privileged, who tend to be the people who are asking, should we march in the first place? And we were less responsive to the voices of people who were talking about the importance of centering diversity and inclusion.
We are going to hear more of those voices from people of color who chose not to participate in the march coming up later this hour. That's Hillary Pilevsky. She's a postdoctoral scholar at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and a member of 500 Women Scientists. We also spoke with Andrew Rosenberg of the Union for Concerned Scientists Center for Science and Democracy. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
I'm Heather Goldstone. We want to hear from you. Did you march for science? Why or why not? Call us toll-free at 866-999-4626. You can email us at livinglabradio@capeandislands.org. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. We're Living Lab Radio. More when the show continues after a short break. This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Not everyone embraced the march for science. We're going to hear now from a few who made conscious choices not to march, and not because they don't support science. First up is Erin Labreck. She's a Florida-based marine ecologist who frequently collaborates with scientists here on Cape Cod. She spoke with WCAI's Alicia Orsini about her reservations.
I think it was the end of January. I first heard about the March for Science on social media platforms. I think it was Facebook or something like that. And my gut reaction, my initial reaction was, oh, this is a really bad idea. Because especially coming after the Women's March, there's such a, the inauguration and then the Women's March, there's been such a divide in the country. And I just felt like this March for Science, it was trying to recreate something the Women's March was doing. But by doing that, it would make the divide bigger. It wouldn't close the divide. And I didn't see that as a productive way to move forward, to move science forward, really. Because so much, I think, of the problem that we have with the mistrust of science is that people don't understand it.
So where in your mind does politics get to cross with science? What kind of things do you think are effective?
Well, I think science should definitely inform policy making. Everything that we do, that we experience in every moment of our lives has to do with science. The houses that we live in, the food that we eat, the cars that we drive, you know, it all comes from science. And so there is definitely a place for science. How it goes into politics, I don't think science should be political. I think it has become political. But I think most scientists, if you talk to them, can separate their values, their politics, from the science that they do. You're trained as a scientist, you go out and you study and you observe and you do experiments. When you're talking about how how science should influence policy, maybe influence isn't the right word, inform policy, you're giving policymakers information to make better decisions. That's what science is about. It's not about telling people what is right or wrong.
What are your hopes for, after having conversations with people who are organizing and marching, what are your hopes will come out of the march itself?
I've seen that. So I've actually been following a bunch of the marches on stuff on social media, and there seems to be a really wonderful, positive message, just celebrating science that is coming out. That I'm excited about. What I really hope is that message can cross the divide that we have in the country right now, and we can get people who are not interested in science or distrust it to listen, and maybe we can listen to them. But I think most important, what I would love to see come out of this is scientists interacting more in their communities, having scientists get out in the community and just talk with, Joe Schmo on the street and see what's going on. I think that'll do a lot to help move us forward. And the third thing that I would love to see come out of this is getting more kids really inspired about the sciences. Teaching them about the world that we live in and what science is about, I think is critical and is something that we really need to put more support and more funding into.
That was marine ecologist Erin Labreck speaking with WCAI's Alicia Orsini. Do you agree? Do you think the march was the right idea or the wrong way to support science? Tell us your thoughts. Our phone number is 866-999-4626. Our email address is livinglabradio@capeandislands.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Now, joining me by phone are two people who were also most definitely not at the March for Science. And it wasn't because they thought it was too political. They've been vocal in their criticism of the march for the way organizers handled issues of diversity and inclusion, and in particular, how they treated women of color. Calif Wilson is a researcher at the biopharmaceutical company Selectus. He tweets as "Hey, Dr. Wilson." And Zalika Zavalos is an applied sociologist with Swinburne University in Melbourne, Australia. She tweets as "Other Sociologist." Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Calif, can you just share the story of your first interaction for the March for Science and how you were received when you offered to help with the march?
Yeah, I filled out the forms online to participate, and I created a few Twitter threads about how to engage policymakers. And effectively, those overtures were ignored, no responses. I reached out to specific people who were a part of planning the local march in New York City as well as the D.C. march, and I think it took a while, maybe deep into March before I started getting any responses.
Were you surprised by that?
Absolutely. One of the reasons is that I, from having done science policy work, outreach, science communication, I knew that there are a lot of scientists who aren't necessarily working outside of the laboratories in those areas. And for someone like me who've had that experience, to make that experience available and being willing to be open with it, it was a bit surprising that it wasn't accepted or received.
Zalika, what about you? What was your personal experience with the March for Science?
Well, I guess it was similar in that because they were doing a lot of their calls for people to volunteer and doing a lot of their promotions on Twitter and other social media, I started to interact with those posts, particularly on Twitter, and in particular providing advice, so resources to studies on diversity, also giving them advice about the types of things they should be thinking about, like accessibility, equity and inclusion. And also I was in conversations with some members of the committee for the Central Organising Committee in the DC March, as well as some of the local marches here in Australia.
At what point did you start to feel that the responses you were getting were something other than simply the result of perhaps disorganization or overwhelm on the part of the organizers and feel that you really needed to step away from the march and do something different?
I guess it became apparent pretty quickly because a lot of the communications that were coming out from the Central March were very problematic. So even they were set up on Twitter around the 24th of January, and by the 26th of January, there had been so many errors consistently, particularly with communications promoting stereotypical ideas about science, particularly, you know, white men's achievements in science. So that became quite apparent, and there were, we're talking hundreds of scientists around the world who were engaging with those social media person providing a lot of feedback about why that approach was damaging. And so that went on for weeks. And then I guess there was just one too many problems happening. It was almost as if there was some major problem with their diversity communications, at least weekly. Sometimes things were happening, you know, twice in a row where they were reproducing some very infamous problems of sexism. There were some really damaging communications that were had overtures of racism.
Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. So one of the, I'll give you a couple. So one that was that began with Los Angeles was they tweeted in early February that they had been hearing from scientists that there might be problems in connection with having a focus on diversity that might lead to violence. And so they sort of asked their followers, what are you going to do to keep the protest free from violence or peaceful? And that's actually quite a dangerous historical connection that they're making from having minorities attend a a science event to it leading to violence. There's actually no correlation between the two, other than policing is obviously quite different when there are minorities rather than majority white people. So that's quite exclusionary. And then around a month later, the DC march had already done a number of problematic things from, for example, not engaging with black scientists at all or having to issue a number of personalised apologies to individual black scientists for not listening to their critiques. And then they actually appropriated some African-American vernacular in one of their communications. And having had minority scientists, particularly black scientists, been ignored for, at that stage, it was over 2 months now, and then using AVE to try and promote the march was in very poor taste and quite racist.
You have actually, as a sociologist, analyzed responses to at least one of the statements. March organizers have revised their diversity statements and policies a number of times, but analyzed responses on social media to one of those statements. What did you find the broader responses were to this?
Yes, so they, as you mentioned, they had put out a number of statements that were basically responding to the critiques, both from minority scientists, and then they actually scaled back the diversity statement after a very high-profile white male scientist critiqued the diversity statement. So then they released their third one, which was in place for the longest. And having a look at the responses from their supporters, I found that the most vocal responses to the diversity statement really focused on discouraging a focus on diversity. So the responses said things like, you know, diversity will politicize the march, it'll politicize science, let's focus on the facts. They talked about how diversity divides the scientific community and that it takes away or depreciates the inherent value that they see in science. So people thinking that science is already equal and not recognizing the fact that there are a lot of structural inequalities embedded within scientific practices and policies. And there were a number of people who also thought that having a focus on diversity would be distracting from the goals of the march. And, of course, these responses are really about a fear of being inclusive of what underrepresented minority scientists can bring to science and being not having an exposure to the achievements as well as the issues and challenges that minorities face in science.
Calif, you have started a Twitter hashtag alt